Welcome to The Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. On this episode, our news roundup leads into reviews of Clarice, Sator, and Greenland's home release, a segment on what would have happened if John Doe had never turned himself in. And our topic this week is defunct TV shows that deserve feature film reboots. Let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today are my fellow host, John Davenport.
Hey, Aaron. How are you doing today?
I'm all right. Amanda Sink.
Hello, fellas, gents, lads.
Hey, this is dudes. I just realized we're coming up on a year that we haven't had full capacity in movie theaters. You know that?
Sad times.
It's a hell of a anniversary, honestly.
Not one I want to celebrate.
No. Next month. So we're about a month away. So we've had 11 months of The Walking Dead, essentially.
The boring Walking Dead.
Yeah, I know why Carl left. Carl! Take me out of this cruel world, Carl.
We can do Carl jokes?
No, that's it. I guess that's a little too dated. Let's move into our news roundup. We're just going to get this show going. The 4400 is getting a reboot at the CW, which coincidentally renewed pretty much its entire slate for the next season. The Wizard of Oz is getting another remake with director Nicole Castle at the helm. This might get Amanda a little excited or disgusted. The Powerpuff Girls are getting a live-action TV series, and it sounds like they're going to be adults who become disillusioned over fighting crime. The Borderlands movie adaptation now has Cate Blanchett, Kevin Hart, and Jamie Lee Curtis in the cast. So they're throwing all kinds of money at a video game adaptation, which is kind of surprising. We received new trailers for Old Fast 9. Well, actually, it was kind of like last year's trailer, just repackaged. And also The Falcon and the Soldier this past weekend, which is coming out March 19th, finally. Renee Zellweger is going to star in an NBC true crime series based on The Thing About Pam, which is an absolutely fascinating podcast, Dateline series. It's just, you got to look into it. It's crazy. And this is the thing that gets me most excited. Salma Hayek is making an HBO Max series about breasts that talk. It's
talking titties.
It's based on a book called The Boob's Life. And lastly, the great, wonderfully talented, and always gentlemanly Christopher Plummer passed away. Absolute legend.
Sad face.
Amanda, of all of that, what gets you most intrigued?
I was going to say excited. I'm going to have a different response. Intrigued or just flustered is going to be Powerpuff Girls. Just, it's a weird concept. I mean, I guess I can respect the fact that they want to appeal to their to the audience that grew up with it, who are older now, and try to find something for them. But it does sound a little CW-ish, if I'm being honest. I was hoping it would just be the same thing, just live action, just really excited to fight crime, and they're awesome at it. But
just like little girls running around fighting crime? They get older every year.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know. I want them to be excited. But I guess this gives them the capacity to explore why maybe they're a little disillusioned and how they come back to that and fight crime. And ultimately, as long as Mojo Jojo is a part of it, that's all that matters, right?
Well, I guess it's like from the late 90s, so they could have an emo take on things. They could just be a little, oh, man, I'm so tired of fighting crime. I just don't want to do it anymore. I'm so disgusted with it.
Well, you know, when you put it in that light, I think it's kind of boring at this point because there's already something that does that sort of thing. When they take kids who were superheroes and show them when they've already done the whole superhero thing and they're already bored of the whole idea, which is the Umbrella Academy kind of does
that. Oh, God, that show sucks. I'm sorry.
Oh, you suck.
I'm sorry.
Fight.
Yeah, that's so overrated. But you love it, so, and a lot of people else also love it, so obviously I'm in the wrong. That's how that works, I think, on the internet.
Yeah.
But this is different. This is the Powerpuff Girls, so it's a primarily female-focused program.
That part's still exciting. I mean, it doesn't take away, it doesn't matter how they portray it, as long as there's the central female focus, where they are seen as amazing doing whatever they do, and they all have their quirky personalities, because that's what was so fascinating about it, was they were able to pull you in and you could relate to one, if not all, of the characters at different times in your life or different moments, different days. And so that was like the real connection and the bond of sisters. And so if that part's still there, if that connection is still there, then it's no different than, quite honestly, like Charmed, where they get disillusioned of them doing stuff, but they're still close sisters and wanting to fight the big bad.
So they could be equally pouty?
Yeah. Yeah, they could be.
None of us want to fight crime. Mm. Done with it.
That doesn't sound interesting at all.
I don't know, man.
Well, maybe you don't have love for Powerpuff Girls, and that's fine. It's not for everybody, but it's for me.
So you do want to see this then?
I do want to see it. I'm certainly going to give it a chance, for sure. I hope it's not too CW. And that's not to be too much of a slight, because there are some CW shows that I like, but I just don't want it to be so teenage drama and it's not done well sort of thing.
So it will be a CW show then, for sure.
Right.
Isn't it like all of their shows? They're basically just some kind of teenage drama. Even the superhero ones are pretty much some kind of teenage drama, it feels like.
Yeah, but they do it better when it comes to the superhero ones, typically. Yeah.
I think they have 112 of them at this point. Isn't it time to maybe... I mean, I guess they came out with Walker, which is a big hit for them. And I'm actually kind of excited to check that one out, because apparently they've done a completely different version than with Jared Padalecki than, you know, the roundhouse kicks to the face. So I'm actually kind of curious about that one. So maybe they're trying to branch off, and they're doing 4400 as well. So they're trying to get into other stuff that isn't just superheroes.
That's pretty cool of them.
Sure. Now, how about the talking breasts? Let's get back to that, because I find this.
Can we go with my title, Talking Titties?
John and I cannot. No.
No. We cannot. No, it's actually not right for us to say the T word.
Yep.
Talking? You can't say talking?
Yes. The other one.
Yes, Amanda. That's exactly what we meant. We can't say talking. But
wait, men are not allowed to say that word, though, for real?
We shouldn't.
Only in a locker room, and, you know, DJT is going to be in there with us, so it's...
Wow. Yeah, that's never going to happen. I want to leave that locker room. I just personally just don't like that word. I'm not female. It's not my word. Put it that way. I'll leave it at that.
I like titties.
That's it. Hey, it's your word. If you like it, that's fine.
Right.
I say it. It comes across profane.
Old man-ish.
Rude. Yeah.
Gross.
Creepy.
Past
creepy.
Generation. Creepy.
70s porn. Yeah.
I think you're going a little too far on that one, a little bit, but you do what you got to do. But let's get back to the happy part, where Salma Hayek, probably my all-time favorite crush in the whole wide world, is going to do this. And obviously, it's not going to be a naughty show, because it's based on... Basically, what it is it's looking at female issues, right? Essentially, is the way I'm understanding it.
Well, at least two of them.
Oh, my God.
I think John. It's trying to take a look at life as a woman and what that means in terms of probably from the perspective of being over-sexualized and things like that. That's the way that I understand it.
Hmm.
I mean, you call it over-sexualized. I call it just about right.
Oh, goodness gracious.
This is why we can't use that word.
Is it Arjon or John?
It's Arjon at thehollywoodoutsider.com. Write him.
Go ahead. I don't check that email.
Well, I think this is interesting, and I 100% know it won't be some kind of sexy naked thing. It'll be it's a concept that will be developed. I just think it sounds interesting in a weird way, and you don't get many creatively weird shows. So I'm interested, not just by the fact that Salma Hayek and it's about breasts.
But mostly.
I mean, it helps. Everything in that sentence seemed like a winner. Made me check out the article for sure.
So simple.
Sometimes.
You know, I think it's really important to talk about something that it's been a moratorium over for me to be even broach this subject, but because of what I saw today, I have to bring this up.
Okay.
So I am going to bring it up, and I'm going to use visual aids. So if you're looking at the feed, what you see is the awesome picture of Jared Leto as the Joker in the Justice League movie that's coming out next month. Now, what you're not going to see is what the grill. You're not going to see the tattoo across his forehead or even the ones on his hands. And I'm pretty sure that some jerk off of a freaking host on this show sat there and said it would be the easiest goddamn thing to retcon everything about freaking the Joker and make it work. And now I see this picture and I see Twitter blowing up with how happy everyone is to see Jared Leto as Joker, and they're going, oh my God, it's my Joker. And I have to say F you to all you guys.
Well, here's what I would say, John. Okay. Everybody's raving about it. I don't agree with that at all. I was on the internet as well. And I think there's people like, all right, it's not awful. At least he doesn't have that stupid damage tattoo. And it looks like he doesn't have the grill and he got rid of a bunch of other tattoos. So yeah, people are more intrigued by it, but excited and willing to forgive whatever that was in Suicide Squad. I do not agree that that is the case. People are just like,
we apparently have two different internets.
Yes, you walk into it with
that's
everybody
how internet
say
works.
Positive things about Suicide Squad or Justice League, which I'm all for. But then you're trying to defend the Joker, and that's a small contingent. I'm not saying it's not out there, but it's kind of a small contingent.
Well, I don't know if defending is the right word. I think he's just saying that there's an opportunity to improve the Jared Leto Joker, because it was so bad before. Yeah, you can only go uphill from there.
Yeah.
I mean, the design is much more, to me though, okay, so yes, that's what I want, that's what I like. But how is it really any different from Heath Ledger's Joker? I feel like it's a pinging off of that, and it's just trying to get to the psychotic breaking point sort of aspect of it. So I don't really feel like it's anything new or creative. Now we can at least say the Suicide Squad one was unique in its own way, in a bad way.
Yeah.
But it was unique.
Yeah, it was unique.
This
in its
doesn't
own way.
Feel unique. But I'm interested more with this one.
He's only going to be in the movie for like 2 minutes. You know that, right?
Hopefully.
Worth it.
Do you want that Suicide David Ayer cut where it's...
I don't really care about that. That doesn't really do anything for me. But I'm excited to see that they are doing exactly what I said they could do, because they asked me and I told them, hey, you could do this. And now they're going to do it. So I'm really glad that they're taking my advice on this whole Joker thing, because you don't like, we just watched a movie with Jared Leto. He was fantastic in that movie. All the little things. It's not, no,
just,
it's not beyond
just
little
the little things. Not all of them.
No,
just
somebody's
going to
Google all the little things. They're going to be pissed when they can't find it.
All right. Well, maybe some of the little things. Anyhow.
John, I feel like you brought this up just to toot your own horn that you said this would
happen. I am tooting my own horn.
That's really what this past 5 minutes have been for.
Yes! I am tooting my own horn because wasn't going to be that big of a deal.
If you say so, man. I mean, I'm just glad we're almost done with it so we can stop hearing people talk about Justice League. Because honestly, it's getting old. It's getting old. Zack Snyder is just playing in this game where he's like, I'm gonna release something every 30 freaking minutes. That's a new clip, and then the internet's going to go crazy about it. And I'm like, you haven't really seen anything yet. I haven't seen an actual clip where he does anything. So I don't know if it's going to be better or if it's going to be the same horrible crap.
All right.
So we'll see.
Anyway, moving past that, Christopher Plummer. So there's that.
Yes. The world's best grandfather.
An icon.
He is a great actor. He's been around for many, 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 many years. And what was the best thing I saw on the internet, speaking of the internet, John?
Oh, I know. I hope you're going to talk about what I'm hoping you're going to talk about. Right. That, like, meme thing.
Where somebody said, once again, Christopher Plummer takes a job that Kevin Spacey was meant for.
So dark, but so hilarious. Dark.
And I still laughed so hard. Oh, I shouldn't, but it was dark and funny. Oh, goodness. All right. Well, remember, you can always find more information at thehollywoodoutsider.com. Join our Facebook group, or we're on Twitter at BuyPopcorn, as well as support us on Patreon. We're supporters at patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. Get early releases, bonus episodes like this month's bad movie night of Basic Instinct, which is the best Valentine's Day movie ever, and get an extra entry for every dollar per month they support us with into any giveaways we have, like the Greenland one coming up shortly. It's patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. Now we've got some reviews. First up is Clarice, which is a look at the untold personal stories of FBI agent Clarice Starling as she returns to the field about a year after the events of The Silence of the Lambs. And due to rights issues, Hannibal can never, ever be mentioned, which seems absolutely ridiculous. So my first question, because Amanda, you saw this early screener. Is there anything to Clarice that is different from any other generic, regular FBI profiler show? Or are they trying to do something unique here?
Are they trying to do something unique? Maybe. Do they succeed at it? Not really. The one benefit that they have about staying true to the Jodie Foster iteration is this actress, Rebecca Breed, has a very uncanny, similar sound, like an accent. She has that same accent.
That Kentucky accent or Southern accent?
So that part, I think she's great in her capacity as Clarice Starling, but it's a real struggle to enjoy or even maintain interest in the show when so much about her character revolves around Hannibal. And that's like the hard part. If you know you don't have the ability to incorporate that character, I'm sorry, but we don't care about the rest of the characters wow. in Silence of the Lambs. So it doesn't make sense for you to just like, well, since we can't get the one that matters the most, we'll just incorporate these other characters. It's just my feeling on it.
No, I get that because I kept thinking about it. And I think a big portion of it is that NBC has the rights to the name Hannibal and the character Hannibal for the TV show there and stuff. And so they can't reference him. Well, a big portion of Clarice Starling is what Hannibal did to her, got her into the field, got her to become an agent, really, and kind of spiraled her in or exploded her into the zeitgeist. And then even years later, you know, in the book and the movie Hannibal, she comes back to Hannibal. So Hannibal's always a part of her life in some aspect. It's weird to have a TV show that's centered around her character and you can't say the name Hannibal. I assume they allude to a person such as would be Hannibal Lecter.
They don't allude to his character, but they allude to the events that happened 1 year prior. And a lot of the struggle for her character is she's put into this special project case because of her notoriety mm-hmm. from the Hannibal Lecter case. In Buffalo Bill. And so that is really what people are like, okay, well, we'll put you into this because you saved that girl. And her new boss is just kind of a jerk. And he's like, you know what? I think you just got lucky. And he just uses her for PR, for her face, to talk about what's going on. But he doesn't want her to use her intellect, her understanding, her profiling. It's constant judgments. And so
he doesn't want her to use her intellect?
Not really, because every time she says something, he's demeaning and he thinks that she is just so incapable.
Oh, wow.
For whatever reason, that's his impression. He just truly feels like she got lucky with the Buffalo Bill case. And sure, all of that story can be compelling when you spin it. But if you can't loop back around to she's got such a distorted and fractured psyche at this point and mindset because of everything that happened. And you can allude to Buffalo Bill and you can talk about those things and how those events affected her. But a lot of it really comes back to Hannibal. And so not being able to really address his character and their relationship, their dynamic, how in a way he was a mentor to her.
Mm-hmm.
So missing weird. Out on that is just, it's really hard to stay interested in this show for that reason.
Okay, and Rebecca Breeds takes over for Jodie Foster. How was her interpretation? I mean, you mentioned that she's got a similar accent, but does she make the character her own or does it feel like an interpretation? Impression, I meant. Sorry, not interpretation, impression.
She's working hard to give you a bit of what you remember that character to be so that way you can easily connect those dots and feel like, okay, this is only 1 year past. But because we're looking at the aftermath, she is much more, I hate to use the word damaged, but really she's experiencing a lot of trauma. And so that's visually represented by her behavior, her language, her demeanor in many aspects. And so she does a great job of giving us what that looks like for her, while also trying to give, you know, a nice tie back to the Jodie Foster Clarice.
And is this going to be murder of the week, or is there an overarching killer?
Well, so they start out in the pilot episode where there's this new case that they believe to be a serial killer. And so they're really trying to bring her back into this because she helped out with a serial killer before. So, okay. I mean, that's as much as I'll say for that.
Okay. So $10 full price admission. What do you give the CBS interpretation of Clarice?
$4.50.
So you really just don't like that he's mansplaining all the time, huh?
I mean, that part of it is annoying. I get that it's a plot point that could be useful, but I have a hard time wanting to watch another episode, which is terrible because usually I can watch television endlessly.
That's too bad.
Yeah.
All right, well, moving on, we've got Sator, which stars Gabriel Nicholson as Adam. He is a very quiet man who lives in the deep woods, and we think that he's basically there to hunt. We learn rather quickly that his brother and sister, Pete and Evie, live nearby, and though obviously slightly estranged, they visit him on occasion to check on his well-being and see how he's doing. And this rundown cabin is very much a hunter's cabin. Well, we come to find out that Adam's grandmother, Nani, who has had this bout of mental illness, well, you get basically bookended interviews and throughout the film where she's kind of talking about what's been in her mind haunting her, that she's been haunted by this benevolent spirit or demon known as Sator. And what we thought was Adam hunting proves that he's actually in pursuit of this living nightmare that is Sator. John and I both saw this film. It's written, directed, catered, everything by Jordan Graham. There's actually like a fun little listing of all the duties he did at the very end, which is almost comical because of how much of the film is him, but I think he does a very strong job. We'll talk about that in a minute. But what did you think about the story at play here? And it should be noted, this is kind of a fascinating fact, that the grandmother in the film, June Peterson, is actually Jordan Graham's real late grandmother. And much of this legend is actually something that happened to this woman because of her bouts with mental illness, where she and other family members believed that they were being haunted by a demon known as Sator. So he kind
That's
of
cool.
brought this into a fictional form, but it stems from real life mythology. So, John, what did you think about the story?
Well, I mean, now that you told me that, I think the story is really cool. The ideas that are executed here are actually something that is different and new, and seems like it would be just open up a whole new world of things to actually go into. It's very different than any other sort of movie like this out there.
Yeah, I found the story. It's funny because I think the backstory behind the story is endlessly fascinating. You can actually go down a rabbit hole kind of looking into how Jordan Graham constructed this, but we're here to review movies. So I'm telling you, from a movie perspective, I really enjoy the overall story. I think it works cool. And the ending will have you thinking. There's a lot after the credits or during the credits, so there's more to ponder as the film reels out, so to speak. And I really just love this concept of, is it mental illness? Is there really a demon? What is really going on? Like, there's a lot of mystery to that throughout the film. You don't know until really the end what's going on. But on the same token, there was a problem for me with the pacing. This is one, and I think, John, you pointed this out directly to me very quickly, which was, you know, as much as you really love the atmosphere and the dread, because there's constant dread just dripping through the frame, there was also far too many focus shots on birds or bugs or eyeballs or rooms. And it just went on too long, where it should have been a little tighter cut, tighter paced. Do you agree that that was the biggest problem, or the real problem you have with the movie, if there was a problem?
If they would have actually tightened up this movie a bit, it would have been easier to pay attention to. It would have been easier to stay focused, and it would have been easier to actually be engaged within the movie. What you ended up getting is what feels like, from time to time, somebody went onto a Shutterstock page and said, and look for stock footage of "give me creepy crawlies," and they put those in there, or "give me this," and they would put it in there. Where And I understand what they're going for, which what they're doing is they're trying to develop that feeling of dread. They're trying to give you something that sets you on the edge of your seat to make the person uncomfortable. And it's always something that should make most people uncomfortable. And they do that way too much in this, where you have this actor who, Adam, the character, is played by Gabriel, and you know that he's not exactly a seasoned actor. However, what he's doing on screen is effective enough to have told the story without the use of all these pace dimming or pace slowing shots that are just designed to do what he can probably do if used properly.
I agree with all of that. Now about the performances. I will say, in terms of performances, and there are Michael Daniel and Rachel Johnson play Pete Nevy. Gabriel Nicholson really doesn't say a whole lot. I mean, his vernacular is almost absent, I would say, for the majority of the film. He doesn't really say a lot. June Peterson, I think, did a very good job. And I don't know how much of that is from, you know, videotapes or him or her actually performing. I don't know which, but she's a very grandmotherly / creepy presentation. So it always kind of keeps you guessing as to what her state was. But Gabriel Nicholson, or Gabe Nicholson, depends on how he's credited, he really kind of carries the movie on his shoulders by not saying a lot. And I thought he did a very fine job. Everybody else was pretty average. I mean, nothing really exceptional. But Gabe Nicholson, I think, really delivered.
Yeah, no, he really did deliver, and he had a great affect to him that would actually make you feel creepy. Though I almost feel mean about my thoughts about Nani and June Peterson now that you've told me that it's his grandmother, because I sat there and I was watching her and I go, I'm not convinced she knows she's in a movie. You know,
and very possibly might not have. You know, I mean, might not have. It's that is something where I probably, because I knew the backstory when I was watching it, I found it more affecting. Now, maybe if I didn't know the backstory, I would look at it more as performance versus this is the woman that it actually happened to. So I kind of, I don't know, maybe I injected a little more into it than would have otherwise.
Well, I don't know. It's like your point of view on it was something where it was, you were able to think of it as probably somebody who might have been acting. But as I, who didn't know the backstory, I had to be convinced that it was acting, because at some points I always thought that person, we're looking at somebody's home footage or something, and that is not acting on the screen. That's a person telling a story.
Well, turns out it was.
Yeah.
Now, here's my question. When it comes to the director, writer, caterer, wardrobe, costume designer, score, whatever, Jordan Graham did everything. We've talked about that. And I would definitely say that he is someone to watch. I think he really has a sense of scope, atmosphere, tension, and whatnot. Just needs to tighten it up. Would you agree with all those points? Or how did you feel about Jordan Graham walking out of it?
Well, knowing that he did all those things for the movies, you definitely know that this is a person who has a love for film and cinema that is hard to match, because there's a lot of work that goes into doing everything he put himself down for is doing. And again, the usage of the footage that he put in there and the ideas behind how to create some creepiness, all of it highly, highly, highly effective. And the mood of the movie, highly effective. Everything was just, I can't think of a better way to do it beyond, hey, let's just make this a little bit faster.
Yep, I agree. And I'm a fan of slow burn. So it's not like I don't enjoy slow burn movies. I'm a big fan of slow burn. It just was a little too slow burn.
Right.
Yeah. More like simmer.
If it was something where it started off slow, but the pace of it would actually grow, which is something that didn't happen here, but the pace actually got quicker and quicker. When the climax of the movie hits, it hits so much more powerfully. And when we get to the end of the movie, it should feel like you're almost out of breath, because you should be like, oh my God. And yeah, like everything coming out of you is like, because it should be like a complete release with all the tension that he was working at building up, but you never really get that full release because the pace of even the climax is so slow.
And I mean, there are some legitimately great film moments in here. I won't spoil anything, but the cave moment, you know what I'm talking about. That was one where I was like, holy shit. I mean, yeah, all the hairs on the back of my neck were up. So he definitely, mm-hmm. I look forward to whatever he does next. I really, really do.
Yeah, I do too.
If $10 full price of admission, what do you give Sator?
I give it $5.
Okay, I give it $5.50. In a minute, I'm going to review this absolutely intense film, Greenland. But how would you like the chance to win your own Blu-ray copy of Greenland, where Gerard Butler, Marina Baccarin, and Scott Glenn star in the Rotten Tomatoes certified, fresh, pulse-pounding disaster thriller, Greenland? When a planet-killing comet races towards Earth, a father and his family make a perilous journey to their only hope for sanctuary, while encountering the best and worst in humanity as the countdown to global apocalypse approaches zero. You can own Greenland today on digital, Blu-ray, and DVD, which includes deleted scenes, feature commentary with director Rick Roman Waugh, and much more. And if you live in the U.S. and want the chance to win your own Blu-ray copy of Greenland, share this episode of our podcast on your social media platforms, and then send an email to us at the email address of greenland@thehollywoodoutsider.com. That's greenland@thehollywoodoutsider.com with the subject line, "I want to save the planet," and your name. And you do this before February 15th. That's February 15th. You'll be entered into a giveaway to win one of 5 copies of Greenland. Now, it's only U.S. because we ship them to your house, so just so you know. But the winner will be contacted directly, so we'll need your address to ship the movie off. So just keep an eye on your email on the 16th. Remember, share this podcast, send us an email, greenland@thehollywoodoutsider.com with your name, and that's all you need to do to enter. Now, let's get to the review, Amanda.
So you gave us a nice description about what this movie's about. I have to ask you, though, it sounds very Gerard Butler, and it does star him.
Oh, stop it.
You did rave about him, so what sets this apart from some of his other work?
This is Gerard Butler acting. This is not, and don't get me wrong, I love the Has Fallen franchise. Is that what it's called? The Has Fallen? The Has,
whatever yeah. it is. We'll call it, like,
the Fallen franchise.
The Fallen franchise. I love those movies, man. I love 300. I mean, I love a lot of what he does. Den of Thieves was a really good movie. He's an actor I love to watch. And I know some of his movies might be considered, you know, big, dumb action movies. Whatever people want to say about him, I enjoy him. This isn't one of those. This is not, it's not even a huge, big, but it's not like 2012. It's not a big jumbo, look at the stuff blow up kind of movie. Instead, it's a very, I don't want to say small scale, because there are some definite special effects, but it's really more of a low key, tense thriller of a film where it's more about this family trying to stay together, trying to get to where they need to go for safety. And they're just fighting to survive. And they're trying to fight also people who just want to survive. And obviously we see how people get when they're pressured, when they're stressed out, when they're hyper-stressed. You know, a lot of this stuff is happening throughout Greenland. And he does a wonderful job. Honestly, career best performances for Gerard Butler and Marina Baccarin, I think, in this movie, because they're both acting wow. their asses off. They're really just trying to project a family trying to survive. He's not like a big kick ass. He's going to beat the shit out of everybody as he runs around, you know, the planet, kicking the comet off its axis or whatever. I mean, he's not doing any of that. He's just trying to save his family.
So it sounds like it's fair to say this story, the story for Greenland, is much more about the relationship, the family aspect, than it is the actual disaster piece. Like, the disaster is more the background, and the family story is more in the foreground.
It, very much so. I mean, there's actually moments throughout the film where they'll be doing whatever they're doing, or they're fighting for their lives, and you'll see actions happening in the background, but it's almost like an afterthought. Like, that isn't the focus. The focus is the family trying to survive. It isn't on the special effects. It isn't on the pyrotechnics. It's not on any of that. It's not on special effects. It's on the people, which is why this is so much different from other Gerard, and probably different from what most people think it's gonna be.
Yeah, that's one thing that I'd noted, is a lot of people seem to perceive this as a disaster movie. So I think setting the right expectations going into it about what it's at its core truly about and focusing on.
Here's the thing. Here's what it's roughly about. Okay, so everything, they're an estranged couple. They're trying to figure out their marriage. You don't know what the problems are until later in the movie. And their son just wants them to get back together. Well, they happen to be together when they are selected for a lottery. And the lottery is, you know, like in many movies, disaster movies, it's essentially, if you have an important vocation or whatever the case may be, for whatever reason, you were selected based on certain skills, that we want to send you off to the secret location where we think we can keep you safe as the planet is ready to explode. So when we rebuild, we'll have the people necessary to make that happen. We've seen this scenario before. So that's essentially how the movie kicks in. And then it's them, their neighbors finding out about they were selected, but their neighbors weren't.
Ooh.
So there's animosity there. There's anger. Mm. You see people desperate to try to get them to help their families out, which they can't do because nobody but them will be allowed inside this secret facility. And then it's them trying to get there. And then they have obvious complications that arise that I don't want to spoil for anyone that make it a lot more difficult for them to get to the safety that they need to get to. So, I mean, a lot of people they know are going to die and there's nothing they can really do to help them. So they're just trying to save their own family.
So this is going to take me to my final question, and it's one I'm really interested in. And you did mention that you're a fan of The Angel Has Fallen, which was directed by the same director for this film, Rick Romanois. And he also has a ton of experience as a stuntman. Do we see that come through with any special stunt scenes?
I mean, there are stunts. There's not going to be anything like what the Fallen franchise has. It's just not that kind of movie. It's really, I mean, Marina Baccarin doesn't get in any fights. She's basically just trying to help her son and her estranged husband get to where they need to go. And she's fighting to be strong and probably stronger than she's ever been. And it's amazing because there is one altercation that Butler gets in, like where it would be a typical movie fight. And it isn't a blowout. It isn't like he's beating the shit out of everybody in the room. You know, it's like a real person fight. A real dad fight. It's not, hey, dad was a special forces, you know, whatever he was. And he also used to protect the president. I mean, it's not like that. It's not like Mike Banning. Is that his name? Mike Banning? It's not like he showed up and he starts whooping everybody's ass. It's not like that. He's not that character. He really, really acts and he's really good at it, I think.
So if the full price of admission were $10, what are you giving for Greenland?
$8.
Oh, that is a very high ticket price for you.
I loved it. And it's important to know, because if you don't know my taste, I don't like disaster movies. They annoy me. I think they're ridiculous. Now, there are some where I'm like, oh, okay, it's ridiculous enough. I can go with that. Like Armageddon, because I cry every time. San Andreas, it's dumb. It's super dumb. None of that stuff makes sense, but I still enjoy it. 2012, didn't like it at all. I didn't think that was a good movie. I can't stand that movie. So, I mean, I'm really not a big fan of most disaster movies, but this one told a real story, which was rare in these kind of films.
Awesome. Well, don't forget to sign yourself up for an entry into the giveaway.
It's a limited time one, so you better hurry up. Let's go to our From the Outside In topic. Defunct TV shows that deserve to be rebooted as a feature film. Now, we've seen this a bazillion times. Baywatch, Spencer Confidential is a recent one, countless others. So what do you think it is about dead TV shows? And we're talking about not on the air anymore, that make features so appealing for the reboot.
You know, it's one of those things that in my mind where I think it's the perfect idea. It's like a Venn diagram of nostalgia, possibility, and then characters doing something completely different. So it kind of sits in the middle and makes it something that would be usually a lot of fun to enjoy.
Yeah, a lot of times I feel like it's got to be something that I could see other people playing the role in. Because if it's something where this character is, they just have to be played by this actor or actress, then I don't feel like that's the best content to take and do a reboot into a film. But a lot of times it's from something that you love, like John said, you have nostalgia for, and it's something that has an intriguing plot point, or it has a great story, one that could be easily manipulated but still stay true to its core. And that's where it gets fun. Especially if it's like an action or a comedy, those can easily be manipulated versus, you know, maybe a drama or something.
I'm a big fan of the nostalgia factor. I think that's obviously a big reason, because name recognition is the number one, you know, thing that studios go for, because they're not thinking of original fare too often. So, I mean, a lot of times they're going back to the well that they know will feel safe and warm with people. And I get that. But there's also that added bonus, I think, that isn't just nostalgia, where it's the premise has been tried. So they know it can work if they just get it right. Or the premise was so clever, it could be done a different way. Like, there's even some that have done it very poorly, like Fantasy Island, which I'll talk about a little bit more in a second or in a minute, is one where great idea, not a great execution, but a great idea. Take Fantasy Island, make it a horror movie. So it's not just ripping off the show. It's doing something different. And I think that that's really important to these. And I kind of feel like if they did more of that, people would be less inclined to just jump on the, oh, they're just remaking another thing. They're just doing another thing we've already seen 10 times before. You know, they're doing something new with it. And I think they should do more of that. And that would be beneficial to them trying to get franchises out of the deal. Kind of like 21 Jump Street did that. Made it a completely different kind of movie and people loved it.
Sure did steal one of my mentions. You.
It's one of mine too.
Sorry. Oh. Okay. Well, let's jump into it. What are your favorite examples of this being done right? And why was that the right way to do it?
Well, so I'll leave 21 Jump Street for John since he had it on his list. I think one that immediately popped into my head was Charlie's Angels. Now,
which one? Which one? There's like two interpretations of that.
Oh, that's true. The first one with Lucy Liu
and Cameron Diaz.
Yeah, they had a lot of fun chemistry. Now, I'll say, though, that the latest reboot of it with Kristen Stewart, I was really surprised by. And that was good, too. I had a lot of fun with that one. So really, that's one that can be easily morphed and you just place new, engaging, and awesome action females in it, switch up a little bit of the plot, and it's the same thing that you can just continue to reboot. I'm fine with that. I love it. I think they're so fun, and you get a little bit of different personalities in the different iterations. So that was one of the first ones that came to my mind.
I was really kind of bummed Crispin Glover didn't show up in that, the Kristen Stewart one. I was just like, just bring him back. The Thin Man, just bring him back. He was my favorite part of those movies. I just thought he's so ridiculously over the top. Him and, well, Sam Rockwell was pretty kick-ass too.
Yeah, that's true.
That little dance he does where Drew Barrymore is tied up. I thought that was fantastic. John, what about you? Tell me about how 21 Jump Street got it right.
21 Jump Street got it right because it took a premise of his show that was sometimes way too serious, way too melodramatic, way too much like, here we are with teenagers and this is how it's supposed to be. And then turns it into a comedy. And in that center of that comedy are two guys who don't belong to be working together in any way, shape or form at all. So, and it's just done in such a way that the laughs just keep hitting harder and harder and harder. And it is just so much fun and energetic, and the characters have really put a new spin on the idea of Channing Tatum for me, and Jonah Hill, who was somebody who I could take or leave, was somebody that I was like, I need to keep watching him. You know, it's just got everything for sure I ever wanted.
Yeah, I will say, I mean, now that you bring that up, what was interesting about how they did that was Channing Tatum comes across as this dimbulb for a big portion of the movie, but he's not. Like, they actually fleshed out his character because he starts off as just like this idiot jock and you're just like, wow, he is the dumbest man. How long are they going to run this joke for? And then he becomes like a real person by the end.
Yeah.
I dug that. I mean, Jonah Hill is pretty much just Jonah Hill, but Channing Tatum, I felt like they really gave him a stretch. My favorite example is The Untouchables. A lot of people don't even know now, but that was a TV show that they brought into the 80s. And man, I that's where we discovered Kevin Costner, really. That's what kind of exploded his career. That's the famous Robert De Niro gains a lot of weight so he can play Al Capone. Sean Connery plays the most
Chicago way.
Scottish Irish cop ever. He's fantastic in the movie. Wins the Oscar for supporting actor. Takes his hairpiece off for a movie. Shocks me. You know, everything about that film and how it went was just masterful. Brian De Palma really created something different with it. That score just like permeates throughout the entire film. There's really not anything wrong with that movie. And I've watched it from start to finish probably 50 times. And I still don't think there's really anything wrong with it. And the whole, train station?
Yeah, train station.
Yeah, that whole scene still is one of my favorite film sequences ever.
I really wrestled with the idea of picking that one myself. Another one that I couldn't get away from as far as being a really great adaptation is Mission Impossible.
Even though it's not anything like the show, though.
No, it doesn't have to be anything like the show. It's just something.
Can we at least say that, and granted, that probably is a benefit because it does its own thing. Like, it makes it the Tom Cruise show as opposed to doing anything. But very rarely in those movies is it actually a team aspect. It's just, hey, who's going to help me get in the building?
It's Tom Cruise.
It's the Ethan Hunt show is really what it is.
Yeah, exactly.
It starts off, and actually now that you mention it, the very first movie starts off of like, they're all working as a team, mm-hmm. and they're doing really great. And then somebody murders the team and it becomes nothing but Ethan Hunt all the time.
Yeah. And every time there are more members, they either don't come back for the next movie or they're dead.
Right. Yeah. Spoilers.
You know, one that I also thought of that, to me, is just a perfect example of this, and that's the Addams Family.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, God, yes.
I thought John might be on board. I was waiting for him to say it, but...
I can't dip into my own well that much.
You do dip in your own well a lot. But
I do.
The characters...
Nobody else is dipping in it.
The atmosphere, just everything about that movie... is representative of the show in its core, but it also springs its own personality into it.
Raul Julia as Gomez is like one of the best depictions of Gomez ever on screen.
Honestly, all of the characters to me, in my personal opinion, they are the best in the film adaptation.
Really?
Yeah, you really can't go wrong with that.
They're just, I mean, when you think of the Addams Family, most people are going to go back to the film. They're not going to think of the show.
That's actually true. Yeah, you're probably right.
Yeah, the show took such a big swing with it. And, you know, there's something about like the show and the movie. And, you know, the idea behind the Addams Family was to create the American family that's the exact opposite of what the American family is. And what I love about that so much is that what they created was a guy who's so obsessed with his wife that he'll do anything for her, and a wife who doesn't resent him. And I think that's hysterical.
And they do a really brilliant job of, and it was very subtle in the show. It's a little more overt, I think, in the films, but they do a wonderful job of showing it's okay to be weird. You know, it's okay to be quote unquote weird.
For sure.
And different and unique. It was great in the show because the show was really at a time where they were kind of masking what they were trying to say. I mean, they were trying to paint a broader picture that a lot of people that you think are monsters are really just good people that you're not giving the time to. And the movie, I think, says it a little bit more overtly in that respect. But either way, the message was always great in the film and the TV show. Films and the TV show.
What about The Fugitive? What do you guys think about that one as an adaptation?
No.
I am one of the biggest fans of the TV show that I know. Well, I'm the only fan I know of the TV show because everybody else is dead. But
I was going to say, I haven't, I honestly, I'll be it's old. Perfectly it's honest, old. Haven't seen it.
It's old. It was really great. It's basically for younger people. Did you watch The Incredible Hulk? It's like The Incredible Hulk. It's like that. He was always on the run, trying to get away, trying to stay out of sight. But then he would always come across somebody where he could help them. And he just didn't know how to not help people. So he'd been framed by the one-armed man. So he was constantly searching for this, but he was also helping people along the way. And they would come to help him as well. And, you know, like that. And he did this for many, many years. I love the show. The movie, I love the movie. It's not... It's not the same as the show. I feel like it was a little too easy for him to find the one-armed man. I did like the tie-in with the prosthetics and stuff, and that's kind of how he found him. I thought that was pretty clever. So overall, like as a movie, I think it works great, and it's a great one-off. I didn't like U.S. Marshals, but I did like the movie. Yeah, I did like it. What about you?
Yeah.
That felt like a really roundabout way to say, I like the movie, but I don't feel like it's a true representation of the show.
I mean, it was. I mean, the basic plot of it was the same. And I love Harrison Ford. He's one of my favorite all-time actors. I just... I think for diehard fans of the show, I just wanted it a little bit more. I thought he just wrapped it up a little too easy for my liking.
Tommy Lee Jones is one of my favorite things about that.
Fantastic.
And every time, every time I think about like when somebody says something to me that I like, that, that may be relevant, but is none of my business and is not, not material to the actual thing that I'm working on. You know, like I didn't kill my wife. And he turns around and he just says, I don't care.
It's one of the,
I think about that scene every time I had to say, I don't care.
Freaking love that performance. I was really excited when they gave him that spinoff. He got it, that U.S. Marshal spinoff. And Robert Downey Jr. is in it. Wesley Snipes is in it. I mean, it's like a lot of people I love. It just felt like it was just recycling the plot from The Fugitive. And it just didn't work the second time. But he's great. I mean, Tommy Lee Jones is one of those actors where I feel like he'd be somebody you want to punch in the face if you met him. But he's one of the best actors of all time. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
Man, I don't have that... I don't know, testosterone or whatever, where I just want to punch a dude just because I see him.
Go listen to all the stories of Tommy Lee Jones. And he's always that guy that just is curmudgeon-y. Like, he's really that guy.
Oh, okay.
I'm sure he's lovely in his own way, but he doesn't sound like a delight. That's what I'm saying. Naked Gun is a great one. You know, you mentioned Police Squad a couple episodes ago, John. That was a TV show that went nowhere. It's a failure of a TV show, and they decided we'll make the Naked Gun movie based on the Police Squad. Huge hit. And then like spawned two sequels. Fantastic movies. And the only downside is it's hard to watch it now, knowing one guy in the movies is probably a killer. It's really funny because you're watching it and you're like, O.J. Simpson's really funny. Ah, oh, but did he kill his wife?
Oh, damn it. He killed people.
I mean, it didn't fit. So he got to quit, dude. Is that okay? I don't know. But I still watch
him. But we all know the truth.
Hey, court says he was innocent. He's still out there looking. He's trying to find him. Keep going. Keep searching the golf course.
Not in the people's court. What is it? That's only the criminal case, not the other case.
Yeah, he lost the civil case.
The civil case. That's the one I was looking
for. But you only need 51%. You got six people that believe that he did it. And, you know, it is what it is. Regardless, I'm not here to determine a person's guilt or innocence. I'm just saying it's harder to watch those movies after that.
I feel like we'd be remiss to not mention Serenity.
That's a pretty cool story in itself, for sure.
I mean, it was done right. And it's one of the few that retains the originals.
I saw it in the theater. Not many did.
Old. Is that what you're trying to say?
No, because nobody else went. That's what I'm saying. Like, not many people saw it in the theater.
Well, like, the movie Serenity is actually what kicks so much life back into the show for Firefly.
Sure, yeah.
And if it wasn't for Serenity, the movie, I would have never discovered it. Because the way I discovered Serenity was that a friend of mine had gone and saw the movie in the theater because he had nothing else to go watch. And so as soon as he realized it was a TV show, he went and bought the series and then invited me over and we sat down and watched it, which his only complaint was, you know, it's really hard watching this knowing that they're fine all the way up until... Like, I'm not worried about anything that happens to them because I already know what's going to happen to them at the end of all this.
That's true.
It's a different
way. Also, I love that you're like, yeah, we sat down and we binged it. And it's like, okay, so you spent 6 hours of your day watching a TV show?
13.
Yeah. I think it's 14. I think there's 14 episodes plus the movie.
I'm just joking.
I understand. But she's saying it isn't like the old days of binging, all right? It's not like 22 episodes of network show. You're not binging 24 here, all right?
Well, it's like binging today. It's like binging anything today is, you know, 13, 14
episodes. That's true.
Episodes.
That is true. That's true.
That is true. If you get that much, now it's like eight.
Eight is like the max now.
I'm waiting for him to cut it down to four, and I'll just be in heaven. I'm like, sweet.
No, that's not even a TV show then anymore. That's just a very long movie.
That's what I want, Amanda.
Got to cut out some of the fat of the story right here. Well, they don't need to know why these two are hooking up.
Sometimes they just start humping. That's what I want. I just want them to start humping.
Right.
I don't need all the...
Right.
Hey, what are you doing tonight? We know. You're humping.
Speaking of humping, I cannot wait till our Patreon episode to talk about Basic Instinct. Just as a side note, I've been thinking about it since the watch.
Well, we'll get there.
Anyway, yeah.
Completely unrelated, but I like how you plug.
Well, you were talking about humping, and it just...
It's fair.
I cannot stop thinking about the soft porn that is Basic Instinct.
I do want to mention before we get to bad ones, Borat, fantastic. Many people don't realize that was spun off a TV show.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was spun off his HBO TV show. That sounds like a bad show. Okay.
It wasn't great. The A-Team. I freaking love the A-Team. Wish it would have been a series. I still see Bradley Cooper.
Love it when a plan got together.
Yeah, that one. And Starsky and Hutch. Big fan of Starsky and Hutch. Do it. Do it.
That's Do a it. Really good one I didn't even think about.
I really dig that movie. And they did something different with it. Like, they went complete comedy. It's kind of like 21 Jump Street, but ridiculous. And I think it worked. Do it.
Do it.
All right, how about ones that have been done very poorly?
The first one that comes to my top of my list is Lost in Space.
You didn't like the movie?
The movie just had so much going for it, but ultimately it's just a snooze fest as far as a movie's concerned. Like, I can't, like, every time I've seen it, I've fallen asleep.
I don't like the time travel part. That annoyed me.
Yeah.
But Matt LeBlanc, I thought, was great in that movie.
Oh, yeah. That was definitely one of those things where I wanted to see more Matt LeBlanc doing stuff like that. But yeah, it was at the same time. Again, I think every single time I've seen that movie, I fall asleep, which is different from the TV show, the new TV show especially. I can't fall asleep in that new TV show.
Well, we're on opposite sides of that fence. I can tell you that.
Is there something wrong with you?
There's a lot wrong with me. What about you, man? Anything where you think it's done poorly, very poorly?
Yes. Okay. And it's also one that I would like to see redone because I know there's great potential, but they really screwed it up. And that is Bewitched.
Oh, the Nicole Kidman version?
Ugh.
Yeah.
Ugh.
And wasn't Will Ferrell in that?
Yes. Take this away, this garbage trash dumpster fire. No, that is not Bewitched.
Well, I mentioned Fantasy Island, so I won't go into it too much. But let me say, I was in love with the idea. Make it a horror movie. Wow, that could be kick-ass.
And it sounded super cool.
Then it was actually kind of cool in the movie for a little while. And then you kind of get to the halfway point, and you're like, wow, this is not going to be nearly as stupid as I think it's going to be, right? And it does. And it doubles up on it. And it's just like, wow, you just keep getting dumber. I'm waiting for Jim Carrey to pop up at some point because I'm just like, this is so dumb.
So you basically got catfished.
Yeah. Yeah.
The movie.
Oh my God. It was awful. It was awful. It's just not a good movie. And I know some people were like, no, it wasn't that bad. Yes, it was. I promise you. It really was. Yeah. But the other one I want to mention is Miami Vice. I freaking love Miami Vice, the show. It's such an 80s staple. Don Johnson, coolest guy on the planet. I'm sorry. Phil Michael Thomas, pretty close too. He's a pretty cool cat. Then they make this movie with two really cool guys. Colin Farrell is a cool dude. Jamie Foxx is one of the coolest guys ever. The same director, the creator of the show, came back. He's a pretty celebrated director, Michael Mann. And he makes the most boring cop movie I've seen in forever. And lets Colin Farrell keep the stupidest mustache that's ever been put on film. Ever. I think ever. And tries to say, this is really cool. Chicks are going to love this. Guys are going to love it. He's going to look so hot and sexy. And you're like, he looks ridiculous. He looks like Marlboro wouldn't even come let him come in for an audition. It's hideous. That's my Miami Vice theory.
That's a strong theory. You know, I have to bring this up because why not throw this in two different sections of the same episode? But one of the ones that I don't think they executed very well is Charlie's Angels.
The new one or the old one?
The old one, the you know,
Cameron Diaz, Lucy Liu,
that one, Drew Barrymore, that one, yeah.
You, what do you smoke? Why do you and hate who is your dealer?
Women having fun. Why do you hate that?
You know, it's not that I hate women having fun because I like the most recent one. The most recent one did it well.
You are drunk.
Wow. I mean, you like the most recent one, but you don't like the...
I don't like the Cameron Diaz one. I don't like the Lucy Liu one. It's too much like, yeah, because we're girls and we're going to kick your ass because we're girls.
You mean like the show was?
Yeah. Did you
watch the show wasn't like that at all, honestly.
It was just a little more serious, but it was kind of like that.
It was a lot more serious. They weren't like, we're girls, and we're gonna kick your ass.
I don't remember.
Come on, have some self-respect.
But it was, wow, are you serious? You're trying to come at women, you anti-feminist?
I'm not coming at women. I'm coming at women being depicted like shitheads. Like those women
were
dumb.
Who are you to determine what a woman should be like and shouldn't be
like? Yeah, John, who are you to determine?
Those women are the worst example of like, we're so women. Ugh.
Let women be whoever the hell they want to be. John.
Those are the stupid ass woo girls out there at the bar you don't want to be have anything to
they
do
with.
They
were not at all. I thought they were actually pretty strong independent women.
You're so wrong.
The theme song was Independent Women or something. It was you know, Destiny's
It was
Child.
The Beyonce song.
Yeah.
Or maybe
There's
it was Destiny's
independent
Child.
About those women.
I think you got that one wrong. I think it's two against one. We're going to disagree on this one. But you have the right.
We're going to have to put this in the group, the Facebook group.
Sure. Anybody listening.
You know what? I'll tell everyone they're wrong. That one is, those are terrible movies.
The second one is a terrible movie.
Those yes, I'll give you that one.
No, he wants both of them, though. He wants to say.
I want both of them. You know what?
Well, you can't have that.
Crimes of the second involve the first. It's all going down.
You don't get that. No, sir.
Uh-huh. I totally do.
You see this finger? No, sir.
Oh, wow.
No.
Don't care about the finger.
That just got real. All right. So, Amanda, let's start with you. Give us your three examples of a defunct TV series you'd like to see rebooted. You can do all three of them. And you can tell us how you would do it if you want.
Okay. So, I mentioned Bewitched. And this one I would really like to see as like a darker version of it. Now, to be fair, I know we've gotten a glimpse of it through WandaVision, and that's not why I selected this show, just for clarification. But I would like to see it more in the scope of just like a dark horror type of show, but still with the comedic element, because I think then it could really be something cool.
Like she's a witch, but she's mean. She's an evil witch.
I don't want her to be an evil witch, but maybe there's like darker themes at play that she has to address, and that would be cool. While also trying to maintain her day-to-day life. I always like that multitasking woman thing.
Okay. I like that. I would watch that.
Alias is another one. Great show.
Now you're speaking my language.
Honestly, just take the show and make it into a movie. I don't need you to make too many adjustments. Honestly, keep the lady. Just do it. I just want more Aliens.
You want Jennifer Garner to still play her? Sydney Bristow?
I would like that. I think she still has the full reign and capacity. What was that movie she just did a few years ago where she was some badass?
Peppermint.
I can't even remember.
She just did Peppermint, which wasn't too long ago.
Maybe that's the one I'm thinking of.
It was just last year or the year before.
She is just at her core. It's so funny.
It's on Netflix.
Yeah.
When I think of Jennifer Garner, sometimes I think of 13 going on 30, and I'm like, wow, she's so like girly and cute and, you know, all the type of woman that John hates, apparently. And then she shows me true range when she's an independent badass that apparently is the only good type of woman for John.
Wow.
And
yes,
shade. I don't know if you ducked or what, but shade is coming at you left and right.
I don't need the duck. This ain't shit.
So I think that one would be a lot of fun, and it would garner a lot of interest.
God, you gross. I was with you, and then you dad joked your ass out of it.
Okay. Then my last one, because I'm trying to go not with my normals, like Buffy and Angel. So
she made sure to throw them in there. Though. That's the way,
I did,
I like
just
to see
so
those,
you know.
Movies too.
Yeah.
If I could do it, I totally would. Okay.
I'm trying to branch outside of who I am, okay?
I'm a girl. And watch
I
me
can
kick
do
ass.
It. John, I can't stand you. So my last one is Moonlighting. And this is such a great. Now, here's the question, though, Aaron. I know you love the show.
Oh, I'm just glad you said it because I can't say it.
Why can't you say it?
Because
he's so proud.
It would be like I would have Moonlighting and like I would just be doing what you know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But would you want to have Bruce Willis? Like now Bruce Willis?
No, absolutely not.
No. Okay.
But I would,
just want to clarify.
I actually thought about Moonlighting. My concern was I don't know if you could ever recreate that chemistry.
It was predicated off the fact that those two people hated each
other.
Yeah,
that's what made it work so well, because both of them did not like each other. But
I feel like
idea?
It's there. I feel like there's two people there, and I didn't have my finger on who it would be, who I would cast. I just knew Bruce Willis is past his time. But
this
show, I mean, if you find the right two people with the perfect chemistry where there's a little bit of love and hate between them, and you can just feel, I think that's what it was between them, is that they had negative tension between them, but because they're acting, it came across as very intense chemistry. And so if we can just recreate and find a pair like that and just turn it into like a detective series sort of thing.
Like a trilogy.
It would be so fun. Yeah, it would be so fun. I would love it.
I'd be all over that. Absolutely. Great call. Good. I like it.
Thank you. Thank you.
John, what do you got? I assume they're all guy shows.
Oh, of course. They're
definitely
guys
not going, yeah, women we're empowerment.
Dudes. And we're going to kick ass because we're dudes. Because that's how dudes work.
Mine are all guy shows. So it's okay.
Yeah. So my very first one is a show called Misfits of Science. Aaron, I know you remember this show.
I love Misfits of Science. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you don't remember what Misfits of Science are, Amanda, because you were a fetus, weren't even a fetus then.
A fetus?
It's basically fetus, I said. So it's basically like a superhero show from the 80s. And you got a scientist who's trying to
take... So we don't have that already? Okay. Go ahead. I'm listening.
Oh,
I just wanted...
Go back and start
I don't
want to
be a woman where I listen and I don't interrupt a mansplaining.
Hey, you two. Get in separate rings or corners.
If you didn't watch the show is about a bunch of superheroes that they're not really the greatest of superheroes. Like, one's a rock star who got electrocuted and now he can shoot out laser bolts from his hands. One's a girl with telekinetic ability. One's like this ginormous guy who is in the show. He was acted by the guy who did Harry and the Hendersons. He was Harry, where he can go from super tall to tiny. And the whole reason why he got himself set up like this is because he just wanted to be normal height and he just went a little too far. And they are sent out to go solve crimes. Well, what I would want to do is something where the superheroes of the world that we do know, like, you know, the big deal ones, something happens to them and this is all what we're left with. And so kind of like a Mystery Men meets 21 Jump Street, but on the scale of Men in Black.
I like this. Yeah. Okay. I would be in on that. Absolutely.
My next show is a show called Voyagers. Aaron, do you remember Voyagers?
I do not. I think, I remember the name. I don't know. I didn't watch it. I remember the name.
This basically is you got a time traveler who is, traveling throughout history, trying to right a whole bunch of wrongs. So kind of like Quantum Leap, but this is pre-Quantum Leap. And he loses his almanac. That would be his history thing to know what, know where to go in time. Okay. And what's going on in time so that he'd know how to fix it. So he essentially kidnaps like a middle school kid who's a genius at history and takes him throughout history to right all these wrongs and to fix what's wrong with everything. So
it sounds awesome, except for there's a little creepy under vibe there where I'm like, he's kidnapping a high school kid. I mean, that just feels like a different kind of movie than I thought. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, It really is. But what I think would be kind of cool is to hand this over to Will Ferrell and let him do his Will Ferrell thing on this.
I mean, I'm kind of over Will Ferrell, but I would give him the opportunity to win me back. How's that?
Well, I would like to see Will Ferrell from like, and the name of the movie just escaped me.
Get Hard.
No, not that one. It's the one where he's living the life and he's got the novelist kind of narrating his whole life.
Oh, Stranger Than Fiction?
Stranger Than Fiction, yeah, that's the one. Okay, so Stranger Than Fiction. So where he's actually being more serious, well, I would like to see him do kind of handle this more of a serious realm, but at the same time, know when to drop the bits of comedy in there.
Okay, now I'm on board.
Yeah. And then finally, there's another show that it probably only lasted for half a season or a season. It's a show called Freaky Links. It was in the late 90s, early aughts. It's a takeoff of the Blair Witch Project where a guy, his brother had died and he's going through the internet and he ends up finding a link that showed him that his brother's alive somewhere. But he was going through all these dark web contacts and found this video. And it turns into this investigation show where he's going off and trying to find his brother, but also there's a bunch of like weird ghosts and stuff that these links end up taking him to. And I really couldn't think of a way to bring this to the big screen. But again, I like the show so much and I like the idea behind it that I'm sure that doing something, I don't want to say Blair Witch-like, but something like Saw-like with this would be really interesting.
Okay, that would be cool. That's something I don't know. So I would be really curious to see what they did with that.
Yeah.
And it sounds like with not a lot of content, you still have a lot of flexibility to do what you want with it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well,
hey, can I mansplain some more for you, Amanda?
Oh, God. All right, my first one is Millennium, which was a show on Fox. It was kind of like a spinoff from X-Files, starred Lance Henriksen. I was a big fan of the show. Now, granted, you would kind of have to change the date, but I'll get there. So a former FBI profiler with the ability to look inside the mind of a killer he begins working for a mysterious Millennium Group, which investigates serial killers, conspiracies, the occult, and people obsessed with the end of the millennium. So I would obviously have to bounce ahead to like 2097 or something, but this could be like a fantastic starring vehicle for somebody like Liam Neeson, I think, to get him out of those bad action movies he's been doing for the last couple of years and get him back into something a little bit more tangible. You could add some high-tech tweaks because the character's name is Frank Black, and he's very good. He excels at hunting serial killers. So I think it would be interesting to have a character that they use because he's so much better than the most advanced of technology. He's just that good. And that, I think, right, could be a nice spin on it as well.
God, I that'd be a lot of fun because I did love that show.
I love that show. I loved it. And my next one is Simon and Simon. I love Simon and Simon. I'm a huge fan of that show. And if you've never heard of it, it's from the 80s. It's two brothers. They're completely different taste. AJ is very prim. He's proper. He's fancy. And he wants to be rich, basically. While his brother Rick is tactless, rough around the edges, lives like a cowboy. But they're always wonderful brothers. They always come together. They're close. They care about each other. And they work together as private detectives in this agency. So even though they're polar opposites, they always come together. And they do, you know, sometimes begrudgingly, but they care about each other. I would love to see, and this is going to sound ridiculous, but I would love to see an oil and water combo like Zac Efron and The Rock, because I'm a big fan of what they did on Baywatch.
Oh, yeah. I was just going to say, right, they were great, though.
They were so fun. I mean, they could, you know, one's an older brother, one's a younger brother. I just love them together. I love their chemistry. Or, you know, maybe you reunite Jared Padalecki and Jensen Ackles from Supernatural.
Well, that would be great, too.
Ooh.
Did you ever see that they redid the opening with John Hamm and Adam Scott?
For Supernatural?
No, for Simon and Simon.
No, did they really?
They did a shot for shot remake of that opening for the show with John Hamm and Adam Scott, and John Hamm was the older brother, and Adam Scott was the one who always wanted to be rich.
I can see this.
It was fantastic.
Oh my gosh.
I would watch that movie. I would watch it. My last one. This is a show I've mentioned before, but it's probably been a while since I mentioned it. One of my all-time favorite shows, and it only lasted like 16 episodes. But Vengeance Unlimited, I freaking love that show. I would love to see a movie of this. Mr. Chapel had a hidden backstory. So you'd probably need a trilogy, I think, to get all the details. I'm big on trilogies, as you can tell. And what he did in the show and what he would do in the movies is he makes criminals pay their dues when the system fails to handle it. So they don't handle their end. The criminals walk. And because of that, people are being hurt in the process. Somebody gets away with murder. Somebody steals their entire fortune and gets away with it, you know, or steals their home and gets away with it. Things like that. He makes those things right. He rectifies that situation. And the best thing is he's not above breaking the law to do it. He will frame people for another murder if they got away with one murder. I mean, that's the kind of character Mr. Chapel was. He wouldn't hurt anyone, obviously. I'm saying like he would stick a body in their bathtub, something like that. That happened in an episode. And what he does is he offers to help people, and he gives them an option. You either pay me $1 million or you owe me a favor to be returned whenever I need it, which is usually to help somebody else. And it seems like, well, that's not fair. Well, I mean,
I like that.
He kind of uses it. So like, if you got the money, I'll go away. You'll never hear from me again after I solve your problem. But if you don't have the money, just help me help someone else. That's what he ends up doing.
Like a pay it forward idea. I already have two actors in mind for this. I love this.
Oh, it's such a great concept. And Michael Madsen was Mr. Chapel, and he was perfect for it. It just was so far ahead of its time because it was a dark as hell show. And Mr. Chapel, because, you know, he wasn't against breaking the law, but he was also this really quirky, weird. He played dirty. He wasn't afraid to stoop to whatever the level was. Like, it wasn't that he had no honor code. He's like, no, I'll get to your level. That's fine. I'll do the same things you're doing. I'll just do it better. And that's what he did every episode. And he was a little bit crazy, but deeply methodical. And I love that. And my person would be Dan Stevens, because I think he could play that crazy,
ooh,
maniacal genius. But Manda, who did you have?
Well, there's two people that came to mind because I know what your taste is.
Mm-hmm.
And two people came to mind that could fit in this based on things that you've liked from them before. And I don't know if they'd hit 100%, but the first one would be Chris Pine.
He could do it. I could see him doing it. He'd have to edge up a little bit, but I've seen him do parts like that. Sure. Absolutely.
The second one would be Timothy Olyphant.
I love
him. Because I feel like he starts to get edgy in Justified. I don't know if that's how dark this character, if he's a darker character, it sounds like he might be. If he'd fit.
He could. You know what? He does have a really wacky sense of humor. So, I mean, I think he could play it. I just think Dan Stevens is the guy that I would put in that pocket. Mm. Just because he's so... He can go from dark, gritty, to crazy, to funny, and he can do it on a dime. And that's what you need to do. Because I'm telling you, Michael Madsen, he never gets any appreciation for acting. You know, he's like, well, he's the same guy in everything. And he was kind of the same guy in this. But he does it so well. He's just so... I was scared of him at the same time I was, you know, praising what he was doing. I love that show.
I got to say, out of all of the options that were presented, that one is the one that's most compelling. Like, I want that today.
I think people would watch it today. It just, when it came out, it was a network show. Networks did not get that gritty. So it didn't last very long.
You should write up a pilot.
Treatment. Just write
send
up a treatment.
Send it to him.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I should. Anyways, listening, I want
to do
that.
A spec script. Make do that. It. Make that money.
We had a couple listener comments. Do you want to mention what they are real quick, Amanda?
All right. So our first one comes from Jennifer Miller. And albeit some of these are still on the air, these are pretty interesting. So she said she has a few. Killing Eve, but it must keep Jodie Comer. 24 would be great and action packed. Mm,
got to have Kiefer Sutherland. That's one of those where I don't want to see it without him in it, honestly. Mm.
Mr. Robot would work well as a film.
That would be an interesting film, yeah.
Finally, and hear me out on this one, American Horror Story. Each season is a new movie, built-in franchise, and by limiting a season to a single film, you keep all the fun, creepy goodness that AHS does well and cuts the exposition where it tends to be weak.
I would watch that, and I think that's a really clever idea because I don't like the seasons of that show. It just, they give... them too much time and they just start getting campy and super weird. And it's just like, I'm done. I've never finished a season of any of the, I've tried several of their seasons and I can't finish one because I'm just like, all right, I'm done.
Our next listener comment comes from Scott Calgaro. He says, I'd love to see a big screen version of The Greatest American Hero cast a lesser Hemsworth, which I think is just funny, or someone like John Krasinski who has proven comedic talent.
Krasinski'd be great.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. He'd be perfect.
Give him something to be a little innocent and also heroic. I think he would nail that. All right. Well, it's time to wrap up our show. We're pretty close to it, but we've got some upcoming releases coming out. What do you want to tell people what to watch?
The first one is coming to Netflix on February 12th. To All the Boys, Always and Forever. Mm-hmm. This is the third one. Senior year of high school takes center stage as Lara Jean returns from a family trip to Korea and considers her college plans with and without Peter.
It's the end of the trilogy. Speaking of trilogies, right? Animals on the Loose, a You versus Wild movie, comes to Netflix February 16th. The protective fence surrounding a wildlife sanctuary has mysteriously suffered a breach. Bear Grylls is called in to help rescue a mischievous baboon, track down a hungry lion, and fix the fence before any more animals get out. Like I said, this is a Bear Grylls movie, and it's interactive. It's kind of like that Black Mirror movie.
Oh, okay.
Where you get
That's
to
really
choose
cool.
if he gets eaten, I guess. I don't know.
So you're all on board for this.
I love Bear Grylls. I really do. He's fantastic. Such a nice guy, seems like.
Following that up, we have Silk Road on February 19th on VOD, and... philosophical 20-something-year-old Ross Ulbricht creates Silk Road, a darknet website that sells narcotics while DEA agent Rick Bowden goes undercover to bring him down. This is directed by Taylor Russell and stars Nick Robson and Jason Clark.
Yeah, and that's the same guy who did the Night Stalker documentary series on Netflix.
Hmm.
And if you've never heard of the Silk Road, Case File, I think, did a great series on the Silk Road because it's based on real life and it's an insane story.
Then we have February 19th on Netflix, I Care a Lot. A shady legal guardian lands in hot water when she tries to bilk a woman who has ties to a powerful gangster.
That's Rosamund Pike, right? She's in that one?
Yep.
Heck yeah, it is.
So you know she's crazy. All right.
It's cray cray. Yep.
Any quick recent film or TV recommendations not previously talked about? John?
I got nothing today.
Amanda?
Nope. Just catching up on the same stuff.
Well, Amanda, you and I both went and saw Lord of the Rings in IMAX this weekend.
Oh, I guess. Yeah, we did do that.
Come on. Fellowship of the Ring and IMAX.
Shame on me.
It's like a whole new world.
It is. It was fun.
It was great. All three of them are coming, I think, over the course of 3 weeks. So keep your eyes peeled for the Lord of the Rings series.
For the last two, yeah.
They're not the extended versions. Relax. But it's IMAX. Who cares?
But they are in IMAX, which is kind of cool. And there was this little girl and her dad at the showing, and I thought it was so, so sweet. Normally, I'm a little cranky about people whispering or talking during a movie, but it was so cute because she was so engaged with it, and you could tell it was her first experience with it, and her dad was trying to get her into it, and I just thought it was adorable. So, like, you can talk all you want. I've seen the movie.
I couldn't hear, so I didn't care. I will throw in, I saw The Equalizer with Queen Latifah. I was extremely skeptical walking into it. I'm just like, she can't move like Denzel, and she, you know, boobs get in the way. But she convinced me, and I really kind of dug, even though I feel like it was a little wonky in parts. Some of the dialogue was a little cheesy and it was a little too whatever. But there's potential. There's, even though it's a network show, so I'm like, oh, please don't be 22 episodes because I won't stay with you. But if they did, it's something that I feel like it's like that Hawaii Five-O, kind of relaxed, just to sit back and enjoy it kind of show. They give McCall a little bit of, you know, because she's basically former, you know, Alphabet, CIA, FBI, something like that, where she used to work for government agencies, and now she's deciding to help people on the streets, like in the Denzel movies and like the early 80s TV show. Late 80s TV show. And she's doing the same thing here. But here she, instead of being a loner, she has a support system. She has a daughter. She has a mother. She has friends and stuff. So there's a little bit different of a take on it. And I wouldn't say I liked it a lot, but I enjoyed it enough to come back to it, to give it more time to gestate. And also, it's my weekly streaming recommendation, and it's on HBO Max. I was supposed to do Amazon Prime, and I did it wrong. So it's HBO Max this week. The movie I picked, this is a recommendation on a streaming service, Irresistible. It's directed by Jon Stewart, and it stars Steve Carell as a campaign consultant who's slightly saddened by recent political failings. So he decides to go up against his typical party leanings to help a veteran run for mayor, and ends up going up against Rose Byrne's fellow campaign manager, who was representing the incumbent mayor. It's sharp, it's a witty satire, and we might have just had enough distance from recent events to really enjoy it. I recommend it. It's on HBO Max now, Irresistible. Whew. Okay, guys, you can share your thoughts on this episode. Anything else in our Facebook group or on Twitter at BuyPopcorn. Our site is thehollywoodoutsider.com. We're going to do what would have happened in 1 second. You can email us at feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com and rate and subscribe on your preferred podcast app. You can also find John's artwork on Insta and Twitter at rjohndraws, Amanda on Veronica's Marshmallows and Smirk Podcasts, and at Sink Into This on Twitter, and me on The Blacklist Exposed and Presenting Hitchcock and at Aaron Smirks on Twitter. John, what would have happened? This is where a host takes a scenario and asks the question, what would have happened?
All right, guys, you ready for my what would have happened?
Let's hear it.
So, what if John Doe from the movie Seven never turned himself in? Now discuss.
Interesting. Would we know what's in the box?
Would the box have ever been shipped to him? I think he still would have killed Brad Pitt's wife because it seemed like part of the plan.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe he would set it up so it looked like Somerset or something, because he still would need to do something to get that wrath, right?
Right.
So he would have to do something. So I would think, because Somerset seemed to be really close to his wife, maybe he could do something to make Mills believe that Somerset did it. And I think that could have worked because he's such an impulsive cop and so emotional. Well, like once he saw his wife's head in the box, I mean, I think if there's anything planted there, it could really make him think that. Like this whole time it was Somerset, the whole time it was you? The whole time it was you? I mean, I think he could be made to believe that. And then they'd still have wrath. So I think he could have easily gotten away with it. But if none of that happened, I still think they never would have caught him if he didn't turn himself in, because they obviously weren't as great a cops as we think they are.
No, absolutely not. Amanda, what about you?
Yeah, I was just going to piggyback off that and say he was very deliberate in what he was doing, and I don't think that he would have gotten caught. But I also don't think that there was much of a plan. Like, there was the master plan, you know what I mean? So I don't know that there would have been much beyond completing his plan, if that makes sense. Like, I don't think he would go and continue on and do more. I think it would just, I'm here to complete my plan, and once I do, then I'm good.
Hmm. What about you, John? I mean, it's your scenario. What do you think would happen?
Well, like, everything you absolutely just said makes sense. I think that the difference thing that I would add to it is that he picks up and moves cities and does it all over again.
Oh, that would be interesting.
Hmm.
And he's never been caught.
Yeah. He just goes from city to city and does the same thing. And it's, again, he does it. He has it so well executed and planned out that he, for whatever reason, just never gets caught.
So, like, and he could just continue to recycle that.
Yeah.
Like, once a year, he just randomly pops up. And then we, you know, John Doe is alive again.
Right.
Kind of like Kevin Spacey on Christmas.
I do think that at that point, he would start to, because once you continue to do that, more information about you comes to light, and you're more likely to get caught the more you commit. So I think eventually he'd end up getting caught if he did it continuously.
I mean, with different cities, though, I don't know.
But then it turns into a federal case, and it doesn't matter where what cities you're at.
Only if you get cops smart enough to make the connection. That's what I'm saying.
Right.
That's true. That's true.
I like that. That's an interesting question. It gives you kind of all kinds of. Do you guys think that would work, though? Frame and Somerset? You think that could possibly work?
No. I actually wrote down nearly every exact thing you said, because ultimately the idea was, you know, remember, each murder he did was a sin, and the last two was wrath, and I think, wasn't it pride?
Envy.
Yeah,
envy.
I so envied
right,
you.
So pride and envy. So they could have, he could have made it look like, so if Brad Pitt was wrath, then Somerset was envy, and you know, envious of having a fan or having a wife who's and about to have a family and all this other stuff. So yeah, it's very possible that's how it could have rolled out.
I use that as my example. This is a true story, because when I first saw the movie, I kind of, before we got to that point, like about midway through, I'm like, maybe he's the killer, because I just thought that would be, I just knew everybody was saying the ending would blow your mind. I'm like, that would be kind of cool if he was the killer.
Right.
But you know, I think they got a better ending probably. Then I would have came
I think
with.
So.
All right. Well, that's going to do it, guys. So remember, the next time you head to a theater, buy popcorn.